Hello, I'm Ray Reich, founder and CEO of RevOps Squared, and your host of the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. We talk to a wide variety of B2B, SaaS, and cloud thought leaders, executives, investors, and people just like you to discuss the metrics and benchmarks they use to make metrics-informed decisions. Now on to today's show. Welcome to today's episode of the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. Today, we are joined by Taft Love, the co-founder of Iceberg RevOps. Today, we'll be covering three main topic areas with Taft. First, revenue operations, when to start and how to evolve the function. Second, the sales development and revenue operations partnership. And third, the key metrics that RevOps should measure and be measured by. Taft, please take a moment to give a brief background overview of your journey to becoming a guest on the Metrics That Measure Up podcast.
Thanks, Ray. Excited to be here. So my journey, sort of a winding road. I started out my career in law enforcement, and after a decade in law enforcement, fell sort of into the startup world as an aging SDR. And I moved from an SDR role into a sales role, and eventually sales, and then sales and marketing, and then revenue operations. So that is sort of the path I took to here, where along the way, I founded a company that does revenue operations for scaling startups, which led to our conversation.
And if I wasn't thinking we're going to have this discussion, but it's such a unique journey, especially starting as a peace officer. But yeah. Tell me a little bit about once you made that transition into the world of sales, sales development, then sales, what was the fascination or what was the catalyst to make RevOps the actual function that you would create a company in?
You know, it's interesting. I had no knowledge of or interest in sales operations, marketing operations, and RevOps really didn't exist as a term yet, although it existed as a function in some bigger companies. When I started in sales, I sort of found myself wandering into operations by solving the problems I saw around me. So I'm one of those people who organically grew into an ops role, who didn't come up through, you know, the LinkedIn operations team for a decade before going out on my own. It all started at PandaDoc, which is a great company still growing like crazy, but I was an early salesperson there. And there were some things getting in the way of me being as successful as I could be. And I started solving them. And eventually the squeaky wheel gets the grease. But in this case, the grease was, I guess you go fix it, Taft. And that's what led to more and more operations roles. And at some point I realized, I think I'm good at this. I think I like it. And eventually started solving the problems with an agency that I was having as an ops leader. So that's sort of how I transitioned from sales into operations.
Okay. Well, you mentioned a word early, and today's conversation, we're going to center around the word early as it relates to RevOps. So the first kind of topic I really wanted to jump into, because this is what your company does for a living, is at what part of the journey, what stage should a company first consider a RevOps function?
This is a really, really great question. And I'm going to say something that my marketing team will be upset with me for saying. At Iceberg, we don't really do RevOps. We do systems strategy and management. Now, system strategy is a part of RevOps, but it's not the whole. And you can have a systems management and strategy function that operates according to RevOps best practices, for example, not answering to the client departments that you serve, but having sort of centralized reporting, things like that. So most startups don't need a true RevOps program early. I think you need to get in startup world, and hopefully this will be meaningful to listeners, you need to have gotten to probably a B round. And that's, you know, obviously is not broadly applicable. And there may be people for whom that doesn't apply. But most startups need a systems team that can provide the data the company needs to manage its business between founder selling and that B round. And what I mean by B round is you've reached a point where you have dedicated sales and marketing leadership, growing teams, and each team is complex enough that your leaders are working out of dashboards and not in the trenches with the people working for them. That's the point at which I think you need to start considering a RevOps team. And so RevOps also isn't universally a good idea. There are still companies out there that should probably have separate sales and marketing operations. The more intertwined your sales and marketing become as a, usually as a function of your strategy, the more likely RevOps makes sense for you.
Okay. You're right. You blew my mind, and you probably blew a lot of the listeners' minds. So I got to really double click into revenue operations, really starting at Series B. And that's kind of that, you know, as low as 5 million to kind of 10 to 15 million, would that, number one, correlate Series B for you, kind of that 5 to 15 broad range?
Yeah. And that's one piece of it. I think the volume of your deals and your strategy also are levers in when and whether you need RevOps. But yeah, I think as like a rule of thumb that, yeah, 5 to 15 million feels about right.
So here at RevOps Squared, we have our revenue operations framework. And it starts at the data layer, and then it goes up into the process and platform layer, and then into the reporting analytics, and then eventually insights and predictive analytics. So you said you believe that revenue operations should start more as a revenue technology administration integration. So you think that's the key catalyst, is when you have a complex enough revenue tech stack, that's when you should introduce RevOps. Is that what I heard, Taft?
I think there are a couple things. Yes, I think you need a sufficiently complex tech stack, that you need a function that ties it all together. And that's obviously vague terminology, but a lot of these answers are, it depends. I also think you need a team that needs guidance. So I generally think of RevOps as including an enablement function, a data function that informs the company strategy. So I think you need to be at a place where you need more than just systems for RevOps to be something you invest heavily in.
So now most organizations, right, they'll start with, they need a sales ops person. And often that starts as a CRM or Salesforce administrator. And then marketing says, I'm running more campaigns, I'm using Marketo, HubSpot, so I need a marketing operations person who does really a lot of marketing automation, both administration and configuration and usage. Do you think, I know it's going to be a what if, but if you had to go one way or other, do you start with a sales ops and a marketing ops resource, or do you start with an integrated RevOps resource who's responsible for some technology and data on both the sales and marketing side of the house?
I think you start with sales and marketing ops for a couple reasons. One, early on, you need a doer. And this is assuming you don't go the agency route, which of course I'm biased, but I always think people should do. But a lot of companies choose not to go the agency route, which is fine. And in that case, you need a doer. You need somebody who has a deep enough understanding of the systems to know how they should be set up, and they need to be able to set them up. And if you go straight to a RevOps leader, you're going to have to hire a lot more resources to get the same output, because they need admins to implement the things they design. And so early stage companies, I think it's okay to start with a sales ops and or marketing ops resource. They just need to have enough exposure to the problems you're solving to know how to fix the early ones.
So another decision that we just touched upon was, when I'm thinking of revenue operations, like let's say I have that marketing automation person, maybe it's even a demand gen that's managing my Marketo or HubSpot environment. And maybe I have a sales ops person that's done doing my Salesforce administration, and they might be doing some reporting and maybe even some level of enablement. But when companies say, I really want to have a RevOps, which is more of an umbrella across sales ops, marketing ops, and hopefully over time, CS ops. Do you see more companies starting with a build? I'm going to hire a RevOps person, and they look at how I go across the entire customer journey? Or do you see starting with an agency who's focused, specialized on RevOps, becoming a more common model? Where do you start?
So I still see more companies building internally. A few of these get it right. A lot of them get it wrong. The issue with hiring in-house too early and asking them to do RevOps, often you're hiring a plumber and asking them to build your whole house. Most of the time, these are Salesforce admins, Marketo admins, someone who, as I mentioned before, hasn't seen how you solve the problems that the company is up against. And they're also people who don't come from a strategic background. So they're most comfortable being given a list of tasks and don't know how to ask the why and do discovery operationally to understand if this is worth tackling and how we should tackle it without causing downstream issues for other teams. You know, sales is a great example of this. You change something and it impacts marketing and CS, but they work for sales, so they care about sales and are doing the VP sales tasks. So I still see a lot of companies going this route. What I've started seeing that's new and is not as common, but works really well, is a combination of a RevOps leader and an agency. A lot of our clients use us to bridge the gap to a RevOps team, but they keep us on for the wrench work for another year after they hire a head of RevOps who's truly just an architect internally. And that is where I've seen people have the most success without laying out the $500,000 plus a year to have a qualified RevOps team.
I love this model because you, especially when you use the word architect, so having a revenue operations architect who is very strategic in the way they think, but then instead of trying to hire a resource that's good at Salesforce administration, also someone who's good at Marketo administration, someone who's good at data cleansing and data analytics, someone who's got some technical skills, that revenue operations architect engages an agency who brings all those different skill sets and competencies together in one integrated environment. That's what you're saying, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. And for context, we're US only, and so try to be competitive salary-wise, but I spend almost $1 million a year in payroll for a team that's smaller than most Series C companies need from a RevOps organization. So hiring it all in-house is very expensive if you want to do it right.
Yeah, so I totally agree. And I always go back to, there's so many different skill sets and competencies that's needed to run a revenue operations team in earlier stage. And even Series B, you just don't have enough budget and capital to bring all those skills in-house. So I love the model, but I'm going to pivot now and go to something else. And that is, one of the things we invest in early is not only account executives and sales, but sales development. Every B2B SaaS and cloud company is really over-indexing on their sales development organization. And one of the reasons is, in the latest research we've done, sales development in the 20K and above ACV is the number one source of pipeline. And when you and I first spoke, you talked about your experience with sales development, moving into revenue operations, and that those two functions, sales development and revenue operations, really work quite well when they're under the same umbrella. I don't see that very often. So tell me a little bit about that combination, how it came to be, and do you think that's going to be a go-forward model that's popular in a lot of companies?
I think companies that want to be successful at sales development are going to have sales development under the revenue operations umbrella. Another unpopular thing that people may dispute is sales development is really an extension of marketing. It is the sales team's answer to the fact that marketing is still buying billboards and doing giant one-to-many campaigns while sales is short on pipeline. And so I think sales development grew out of this need that was a gap between the sales and marketing programs. So if marketing and sales live under RevOps, then sales development needs to. And it becomes really hard for companies to measure the impact of their sales development org if they're not thinking of it as part of the same funnel as sales and marketing. And even if you think of it as being part of the same funnel, if you're giving them different resources and they're not part of the RevOps umbrella, they're not going to get the same quality of data that comes out of sales and marketing teams. And I think a lot of this comes from the sales development function not doing a good job of measuring the right metrics and never really having a seat at the table.
Wow. It's like throwing meat to a lion here. I don't know which way I want to go with this, Taft, but since you did a hot take and you already have pissed off at least marketing, if not sales development, let me go this way first. One of the biggest challenges I see from the research we do is sales development is not getting enough support from the operations teams, whether it's sales ops or rev ops. The result is less than 50%. And the latest benchmark research we did was 49% of their time is spent doing outbound prospecting. The other 51% of their time is spent doing operations work, list creation, list prioritization, data enrichment, research, et cetera. So first of all, do you agree that sales development gets really the short end of the stick on operations? Why do you think that is?
Yes, I absolutely agree that sales development gets the short end of the stick in terms of operational support. I think there are a couple reasons for this. One is if you rewind even 10 years, sales development was still a boiler room of cold callers who aren't particularly well-trained being thrown at the marketplace. I don't think there are enough Lars Nilssons out there. He's the VP of Global Sales Development at Snowflake. There are not enough actual executives who have risen through the ranks of sales development to actually yell about this when they have a seat at the table. And I think it's born of a mindset of sales development, A, not being able to demonstrate its value. So it's this cognitive dissonance. We know we need it. A lot of pipeline comes from it. But we don't have a clear understanding of the incremental value or the potential value of giving sales development that other 50% of their time back for doing their job. And so not enough teams are elevated, which leads to not enough teams being elevated, if that makes sense. It's a cycle.
And one of the things that I've seen is almost, especially as you get to 8 or more sales development representatives, a dedicated ops person, whether you call it sales development ops or a resource from your revenue operations, kind of very focused on what is the data life of an SDR? Where's their operational efficiency? So do you think having a dedicated kind of sales development ops person under the RevOps umbrella is the best approach, Taft?
100%. Yes. I think a sales development ops program is key to elevating your SDRs to actual salespeople. Otherwise, yeah, they become essentially a glorified data entry team, putting a bunch of data into outreach or cleaning the data you have in order to drop them into outreach. And that means less time spent crafting thoughtful, intelligent outbound messaging and more time spent playing a numbers game, jamming as many contacts as you can into every sequence, because that's really the only way to succeed when half your time is already taken up just doing data cleaning.
So we are the Metrics That Measure Up podcast. So we get to go into my area of love and passion, metrics. So you said sales development often don't have the right metrics. Mm-hmm. So what are the core metrics that we should be evaluating sales development by? And then the follow-on is going to be in how does revenue operations improve those metrics?
That's a great question. So what we see today in almost every sales development team, and because this exists in every sales development team, it is common for sales development reps to not even know it's an issue, is everything is focused on the contact level because those are the things that are easy to measure. So if you use outreach, it's really easy to understand to how many people have I reached out, to how many of those people have opened my email, answered my email, how many opportunities came from reaching out to X number of people. The problem is we sell to companies. And so that's not actually a pipeline. That's sort of an activity waterfall. And where sales development needs to be focused is on the company level, just like a sales team. So a VP of sales can tell you how many companies do we need opportunities with, or how much opportunity value do we need? What pipeline multiple do we need to hit our number? Your average sales development team needs to be able to say, I have to approach X number of companies in order to get a meeting, and I need Y meetings in order to get an opportunity. And so that involves measuring things that the tools you use don't measure for you already. Outreach can't answer the question, how many companies did we start prospecting this week? How many of those companies talked to us on average? That data is actually really hard to get. It's all in your CRM if you use Salesforce, but it's spread across 5 objects. It's spread across your contact, account, task, event, and opportunity objects. Whereas the VP of sales can answer all of these critical pipeline metrics because the opportunity object has all of the information you need to report on it. So those are the metrics that we're missing in the sales development world, is these company specific pipeline metrics.
Good. Well, I will tell you, I had Anna Baird, who's the chief revenue officer from Outreach, on the podcast just last week. Mm-hmm. And that gap and hole that you mentioned, where you have five different objects and how do you bring all that together to ask those insightful questions? How many companies did we start marketing to? How many people within those companies? How much of that resulted in the conversation, and then conversation, meeting opportunity? They mm-hmm. see that need. And I actually see some of these sales execution platforms mm-hmm. actually maybe replacing your CRM as that primary point of engagement between sales development and the prospect. Do you agree with that? That Salesforce or HubSpot becomes less important over time and the sales and execution software becomes more important?
I absolutely think so. And we're seeing this happening everywhere, frankly. I think there is a time in the not so distant future when Salesforce is just a database, because look at how much trouble they've had getting people to move to Lightning. The UI is a problem for Salesforce, and not because the UI is bad, but part of it is because salespeople, including sales dev, increasingly work outside of Salesforce. Look at companies like Troops that bring almost every Salesforce data manipulation activity into Slack. Look at Clary, where you can manage all of your opportunities in another app that gives you additional insights. So I think sales development's no different. In fact, at Smart Recruiters, when I ran sales development and sales operations, one of the early decisions we make is, where are sales development reps going to live day to day? And it will either be Outreach or Salesforce, but I didn't want it to be both. And I think more companies are making these decisions for people throughout the funnel.
Oh, but you didn't tell us. What did you decide?
We actually decided on Salesforce. I don't know if I would make the same decision today, because Outreach has come along quite a bit and their UI is better and better now.
I'm going to ask you, was Brett Queener there when you made that decision?
Queener had just handed the reins to me. He left right when I started, but he probably wouldn't have let me go the other direction if I had said that's what I was doing.
Audience, the reason I asked that question of Taft was Mr. Queener was an early Salesforce executive, so I think I know what his decision would have been. You live in Salesforce, right?
Yes, Queener. In fact, at Smart Recruiters, we called it the app because Queener and Bob Memmer, another early executive who joined Salesforce via acquisition, they were part of the leadership team at Smart Recruiters. So we were a Salesforce shop for sure.
Well, let's not go down memory lane too much. Let's get back to the metrics. So you said that sales development needs to at least understand what the ultimate outcome or leading indicators are, like pipeline development mm-hmm. and even ARR, and then work back up the funnel to understand conversion rates. But ultimately, they should be measured on pipeline. Would you agree with that?
I agree. I also think it depends to some extent on how big is the gap between what the sales rep does and when pipeline is created or when revenue is created. I think there are some teams, at Smart Recruiters, for example, I was a big advocate of holding the sales development team to held meetings. That was their goal, because there was a huge gap, a lot of selling required to get from the first meeting to actual pipeline by our definition. So I think that's something you should explore as a team when you're thinking about this. Don't use what somebody else has done. I think you should ask, how big is the gap? How much selling is involved between what a sales development rep does and whatever goal you've set for them, be it revenue, pipeline, or something else?
And I also would say that you should bifurcate that between inbound and outbound, because on the inbound side, you should be much closer to pipeline generation. But that's another topic. Back to metrics. Revenue operations. What are the metrics that we should be measuring and using to evaluate the business impact and return on investment of a revenue operations function?
This is such an interesting topic, and one I'm still exploring myself. And I feel like I should have a clear answer for you, but I can tell you where I've gotten in my thinking. I like to break RevOps metrics into two categories. One is internal team performance, and the other is customer experience metrics. And I think you need both. Not enough RevOps teams today are thinking about or incentivized to think about the customer's experience. They are all focused on making the life of a sales rep, the life of the VP of marketing, or the marketing team easier. And I don't think enough focus is put on metrics meant to gauge the objective experience of a buyer. as PLG SaaS companies become more and more prevalent, I think this is going to become a bigger and bigger part of the RevOps team's goals as well.
Let's double click on that, Taff. Everybody talks about the customer buyer journey, the customer experience, and we need to really focus on it. How do you measure that? What are the two or three metrics that says, oh, we have a pretty efficient customer experience?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are a lot of options here. And of course, it depends on your buyer journey, but some examples might be, as you think through what your customer does to get from A to B, to go from a first visit to your website or a first call with the sales rep, if that's how your sales motion goes, to buying a product, what are some measurable pieces that are good proxies for customer experience? So maybe it's lowering abandoned shopping carts. Maybe it's speed to revenue for companies that have a true PLG motion that ends with putting in your credit card. Maybe it's an NPS survey for people who self-served or those who worked with your sales team and just signed a contract. How was the experience of receiving and reviewing and signing a contract? But it needs to be something that you can put a number to. Soft metrics, you know, a goal can't simply be improve customer experience without hard numbers to put to that are good proxies for that experience. But those are a few examples that you might consider as a RevOps leader.
So I'm going to throw something out at you and see what you think. This comes from a revenue operations perspective. So three very important metrics. So number one, it's conversion. Conversion across the entire customer lifecycle from initial awareness and engagement to some level of opportunity to retention expansion. So kind of conversion rate at every step of the process. Second is the velocity. How quickly do I go from initial point of engagement to a meeting and meeting to a qualified opportunity and then qualified opportunity to a close? And then even after the close, if I have a land and expand model to my first upsell, cross-sell, et cetera. So I've got conversion, I've got velocity, then of course volume. You know, what's the volume at each stage of the funnel? And do those coverage ratios at each step of the process go up or go down over time? So what do you think about those three kind of metric frameworks?
I think those all tie really, really well into that sort of internal team performance bucket, the one that's not looking at it from the customer's point of view. I think those are really great pillars for how to think about our revenue operation team's output within the company. I think those are great.
Okay, I can't believe it. Our 30 minutes is almost coming to an end here, Taff. So two quick questions. One is, I'm such a fan of RevOps. I created a company just like you did, focused on revenue operations initially. And ours has really evolved into looking at all the metrics that revenue leaders need to understand, how they're performing both internally, internal trend lines, and externally against industry benchmarks for similar-like companies. And to me, it says that revenue operations is a core competency that every chief revenue officer of the future needs to have. When I say have it, at least understands the importance and then will hire indoor contract with the right agency to implement that. So do you agree? Do chief revenue officers of the future need to really have a passion and deep understanding of revenue operations?
I'll go a step further. Chief revenue officers of the future will come from some sort of operations background more often than a sales background in the near future. Right now, if you go look on the job market today, it is easier to find qualified sales management who know how to run deals than to find qualified operations leadership who know how to build and manage the infrastructure that underlies the entire revenue team. So I think I'm a step further than you there.
No, I'm right on with you because I think a chief revenue officer is not just an elevated sales executive or elevated marketing or CS executive. It's truly a business operations executive. And my concern is over time that CRO isn't operationally excellent, that she or he is going to be reporting to a president COO.
Absolutely. I think you're right.
Operational discipline. And let's give the listening audience a chance to get to know Taff just a little bit better with three quick questions. And the first one is, what CEO or company is a must follow in 2022?
Lean Data. I think Lean Data is at a really interesting place and they are experiencing massive growth. They've really exploded in the enterprise. And I think as they work down toward the mid-commercial and commercial sectors, they are going to be everywhere because they solve a critical issue in what is the biggest CRM for almost every sector of company in the world now, Salesforce.
You totally agree. And a shout out to Doug Bell, the chief marketing officer. I was just on his new podcast called The Revenue Generator. And I really agree that they're looking at revenue operations from a very strategic inflection perspective. Second, which tool should every SaaS company be using?
I'm going to go a little different here. I think every SaaS company needs to get on board with something like ChartMogul or one of its more mature competitors upmarket, but a very strong revenue and specifically recurring revenue measurement platform that gives you really strong insights versus trying to measure out of your CRM your recurring revenue metrics.
That's a great one, Taft. And last one is, you're talking to a senior in college or someone who just graduated, and they think, hey, revenue operations, that's a pretty interesting role. What advice do you give them?
I would give them, do not conflate systems administration with revenue operations. And if you want to do revenue operations, you need to learn how businesses work. Because if you don't understand how businesses work, you cannot be successful in RevOps. That and systems are not one and the same, despite the fact that many small companies conflate systems operations and RevOps.
It's interesting. I actually love cross-functional training. And one of my perspectives is to be a great revenue operations leader of the future, Taft, they need almost an experience like you, where maybe they served a year or two in sales development, maybe a year or two in demand gen or marketing, and then into the operations role. Do you think that's an interesting path to ultimately be a lead of revenue operations function?
100% agree. And for all of history, the big successful companies, this is how they train executives. Cross-functionally, they make sure they're exposed to every part of the business. And so even though at the time it was due to frustrations, I'm very, very glad that I got the experience to work with all different parts of the businesses in which I worked. Had I focused on becoming the best Salesforce admin I could, I would be a Salesforce admin today, and I wouldn't have this understanding of the rest of the business that put me in a position to go start a successful agency versus doing in-house admin somewhere.
Taft, that's a wrap on today's episode of the Metrics at Measure Up podcast. I want to thank you, Taft Love, co-founder of Iceberg RevOps, for being a guest.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And to our listening audience, if you're enjoying the content and guests we have here on the Metrics at Measure Up, it would mean the world to us to go ahead and subscribe to the Metrics at Measure Up podcast on your favorite podcast app. Provide us that 5-star rating and provide us a recommendation or a review on how we can make the show even better for you in your journey as a B2B SaaS or cloud operator and executive. Thanks, Taft.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you for listening to today's Metrics to Measure Up podcast. If you would like to learn more about B2B SaaS metrics and benchmarks, please visit RevOpsSquared.com.